Hi, Marcy.
Hello.
So I'm pretty stoked to talk to you in general. You've had a lot of interesting circumstances in your life recently. But what I really want to ask you, first of all, because this is what's important to me, and I'm curious if you could describe van life to me and what that is and how you use that as a kind of escape from these screens that we spend so much time with.
Yes. So van life probably means different things to different people. To us, it is an escape and kind of a home away from home, make it really comfortable. It's got a diesel heater in it, diesel furnace. But you know, we're pretty lucky that we have a really comfy home to go back to. I think for a lot of people that can't afford to live in big cities, van life is stability and a warm place to sleep at night. So I remember, you know, walking around Seattle and be like, man, there's a lot of people sleeping on the streets here. And that's because people can't afford to live there. So van life in that circumstance is very different than how we think of it in our household, which is a fun time and a privilege to get to go out and explore, go wheeling and go camping and then come back to our house. So yeah, it's a big topic. And I'm so excited that, you know, it took us 2 years to get our van up and running, and it enables some pretty great escapes. I can work remotely, which is really awesome. So looking forward to more of that in our future.
I think that's a pretty good point, because there's the, you know, the recreation, and we see a lot of that. So Marcy and I are both in the Pacific Northwest. That's where we live at. And, you know, like, it's just the paradise for outdoor recreation. So you have that side of it, but then you have the folks that this is just a place that they can afford, and it's how they live, right?
Yeah.
In their vehicle. In that respect, a van's kind of a nice tiny house, probably for a lot of folks too, and is even a step up.
Yeah.
My sister lives on a 26-foot boat on the Willamette River here in Portland. And like, I'm always impressed with folks that can achieve that, right? Like have a small space and their small footprint and make it work. It's not the easy route, I guess, when you're talking about that as your home.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy, but I think people make it work and find more affordable ways of living. And it's like, whatever you got to do to have a warm place to sleep at night. It's been really cold here in the Pacific Northwest this week. I think we were in the low 20s Fahrenheit, down to like 16 degrees at one point, maybe colder. So that's pretty dangerous to be sleeping literally on the street. So if you've got, you know, a van or, you know, some sort of a vehicle that you could sleep in, like, that's a huge deal. So yeah, I feel really lucky that we get to use it as a recreation thing. But when you asked me this question beforehand, I was like, wow, well, yeah, it certainly means different things to different people.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Because, you know, when I was thinking of it, I'm thinking of the fun time four-wheeling in the woods with your conversion van, because that's what springs to mind. But yeah, there's definitely a deeper story there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a privilege to go out on these trips and just have the best time and not want to come home and be like, why do we have a home anyway? And then we come back to it and I'm like, oh yeah, nice to have a little more space.
What's the longest trip you've managed to do in, with your van in the backwoods?
We went out for a month in September, October for our honeymoon. And we came home in between to drop the dog off so we could go mountain biking. And that was pretty awesome. I really liked Montana, and there's some spots in Idaho that are really neat.
Oh, no doubt.
And yeah, just getting out there, and we were pretty glad to have a diesel furnace by the end of it, but it was super fun.
Yeah. To go from the escape back to our general reality, you recently moved your entire blog from WordPress to Gatsby. And like, I talk about it all the time, like with anybody that'll listen, because I personally love Gatsby as a product and a company. But I was wondering, like, the technical experience of converting your space on the internet from, you know, WordPress, which is kind of traditionally the leader in that space, to this kind of new platform with Gatsby.
Yeah, it was I told my husband it's like a once in 10 year affair to make that big of a move, for me at least. I don't have a ton of content, but going back to, I think I originally moved on WordPress in 2010. So that's a long time to kind of get used to a way of working. And I just kind of got tired of all of the server maintenance. I was always worried about like the vulnerabilities on my server. It's like, I'm not a full-time ops person. So I really like DigitalOcean, but I found once Gatsby came along, it was just a totally different way of working with, you know, instead of having a database, you do a build and then you push. I mean, now I'm using Git and Netlify, so I think it only really deploys changes. So you're not having to, you know, copy all of the files over as if you were doing it manually. But I found it was a really awesome experience going from WordPress to Gatsby with the plugin that they've made. So it took some getting used to, for sure, and I just had to, I don't know, do some error debugging, and it was really great kind of source material for my new job, which is the head of learning at Gatsby. Ultimately, I ended up completely detaching from WordPress. Like, the plugin made it possible for me to, it kind of built out my pages and pulled in all my content so I could at least, you know, bring my design vision to life. And then ultimately I, you know, detached from WordPress and moved all of my content into Markdown. And that was, yeah, it could have gone smoother. I think I need to write a postmortem of like, don't do what I did, but it was good. And I'm really psyched that I have a new site that uses CSS Grid, and it, you can save stuff offline, and it's like the future is here.
Yeah. It's nice. So you mentioned in there, and it was probably one of the highlights of that is so you're now the head of learning at Gatsby. Did the site migration happen? Was that occurring before the job, or was that as a result of the new position?
It was occurring before the job. And I mean, when I'm excited about something, I'm usually shouting it from the rooftop. So I think they had seen that I was working with Gatsby, and Jason Langsdorf reached out to me and was like, hey, I've been meaning to talk to you, actually. We have this role that you'd be perfect for. And at the time, you know, I had taken all that time off for a honeymoon, and I felt like I really owed DQ, my former employer, some quality time. So at first I was like, I don't know if I'm ready yet. And then I took a closer look at what he was saying. I'm like, wait, head of something, good pay, benefits. I mean, yeah. DQ has great benefits, but like every time you move jobs, I mean, having to deal with health insurance and, you know, pay, and like, it's a bigger decision than just the work alone. Like when you have a family and a household. So for us, this was just a really smart career move. And it turns out that I'm really psyched about Gatsby. So it's like a perfect fit.
Yeah, it's definitely a bigger change than, say, moving your website from WordPress to Gatsby. Moving yeah. your entire, like, are you like uprooting your entire self and moving into a new position?
My entire life. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know at this point in time, you've only been doing this job for, a couple of weeks. But what is the head of learning? What is that position? And what's your role there at Gatsby?
I am in charge of the learning experience at Gatsby, and that's pretty broad. So because the nature of Gatsby is that they are really putting a focus on community and making sure that the experience of using Gatsby is positive, and, you know, if there's bugs and problems, that we're working through those. And so documentation plays a huge role in that. Error handling, that's a big project I'm about to start. Just making sure that, like, if people are stumbling on stuff, that we're not just like, whatever, it's not our problem. That things are getting fixed and addressed and documented. And so I think they have done a really great job already of getting good docs, and they have a great infrastructure for it, great community. They just need somebody dedicated to it full time. Because there's lots of things to do, and it's a startup. And at some point, you know, you grow to a point where you need to create new roles for a certain amount of work because it's too much for, you know, the founders to do or whoever was doing it before. I think currently the woman who was doing head of learning before, Shannon, she is also a UX designer and a UX person researcher. So she was doing two jobs, and that's not super sustainable. So, I stepped into this role, and it's really cool being technical. And so, like, this morning we had a meeting on caching to talk about how to smooth out that experience. And so I get this core insight into what the team is doing, so I can kind of look longer term at, okay, well, maybe we'll document this fix now, and then long term we'll have some other tool to make that easier. So yeah, lots of things. It's sort of like I have to prioritize and pick the most important things because there's so much we could do, but we only have so many hours in a day.
Yeah, it's like the eternal challenge, trying to figure out what's most important and what's next. And like, there's a lot of complex projects that you can do, and then there's a lot of, you know, like relatively simple things.
Yeah, and the relatively simple things could eat up your whole week. Like, you gotta get those bigger goals in mind so that you can kind of move the needle further forward rather than just these little things, but alone.
I've realized recently with a lot of this, you know, because I spent a lot of time thinking about how to teach people as well. And I tend to try to turn everything into a software project when a lot of times it's more of a human need, like a communication issue, whether it's like some sort of direct communication versus like building some sort of software tool or robot to shield me from that communication, which has just been interesting to me.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, sometimes the answer is just writing a good doc on it.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, you write the doc and you're like, oh, this could be better. That's when, you know, maybe long term, there's, you know, more thinking around a technical solution that prevents the user from having to do what you documented in the first place. Or maybe there's an easier way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a really interesting role because I'm the head of learning and documentation, but they consider that pretty core to the product. So rather than just kind of being off in marketing or being off on the side, like I'm on the product team, the product leadership team. So that for me professionally was a huge step forward to be the head of something and to be, you know, in the conversations where we're talking about where we want to go instead of like being further down the chain and being like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll go present at this conference, but I don't really know how it's helping further the business goals of the company I'm with. So
yeah,
I'm pretty excited.
I mean, it can like that. That's an extension too, right? Like those presentations can and should be important and part of the overall strategy and messaging for a company.
Absolutely. Yeah. But what I think about is you're kind of presenting on what's there now and not looking too far forward. Like maybe there's some new technologies you're being exposed to. But like what happens when you bring that information back to the team? You're like, hey, there's this really cool thing going on. Like we should be thinking about this. Yeah, if that stuff never ends up happening, you're kind of, it's like, okay,
right.
I don't know where we're going. So yeah, to be in those conversations where, you know, decisions are being made of which direction we're going in is, I personally felt ready to take on more of responsibility like that. So it was great timing.
Overall, like what you kind of see is the potential for Gatsby in terms of a platform, like what kind of impact can it have on the internet and how people communicate?
I think it could have a huge impact. I mean, WordPress has dominated for a long time. I think what's the stat? It's like 33% of the internet or something.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that's going away, but the thing with WordPress is that it's really centered around the authoring experience. And I could go off into that, but I will spare you my personal opinions of that. But what I want to drive home is that the front end development experience for that, like you're writing PHP, you're kind of writing sites in a way that used to work very well, but if you have a lot of traffic, you got to cache it, you got to add a plugin for that. If you are doing a lot of stuff in developing markets and on low-powered mobile devices, you're going to have to do a lot of extra work to make that content render quickly and work in all these scenarios. So Gatsby presents a way of developing front-end code that really looks forward, like looks way more to the future. So no database, no PHP, you know, it builds out static HTML, which as an accessibility person, I really love. I'm kind of in this position where I care a lot about JavaScript, but I also care about accessibility. And so, yeah, Gatsby just gives you this new way of developing that outputs static files, but you have this rich interactivity opportunity at the same time. So I think it's really pushing the needle on the innovation of front-end development. And where I see it growing in the future is to kind of democratize that experience with themes and kind of an ecosystem so that if someone isn't a, you know, hardcore React developer or even a JavaScript developer at all, that they could still use Gatsby. I think we're pretty early in that part of the story right now, and it's definitely positioned more at developers, but I think long term there will be more of an ecosystem to support more collaboration with your colleagues. And so there's definitely more to come on that.
Like right now, it feels like a very strong open source development project with a huge upside potential going forward.
Yeah.
You mentioned your experience, like, you know, on the internet, I see you a lot. You're a champion for accessibility and, you know, empathy driven development. And I'm wondering how your experience and perspective is going to help Gatsby along the way in reaching that potential.
It helps that they're super open to that stuff already. And I know I was sold when I did my kind of initial test of Gatsby and I did a build and I'm like, does this work without JavaScript? And it does. Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on how you build your app, but I didn't use client-side routing in mine because I wanted, you know, actual static pages and I'm not doing a ton of interactivity. I have some longer-term vision for my homepage that GraphQL really makes a lot of sense. So that's why I chose this technology. But we can't leave people behind. So that's something I'm thinking about a lot. maybe this will dovetail into, I think I saw you had a question about the kind of CSS versus JavaScript debate. So I definitely am excited to have an impact, to ask hard questions like, are we doing enough for this group of people? You know, is this as accessible as it can be? But they're already proving to be such an open-minded, caring team that I think I'll be in good company there.
Yeah, they really do. And it's not just like paying lip service to it. Everybody I've met in the organization has, you know, like it's truly something they're behind and want to affect change and push forward in a positive way.
Yeah.
So you mentioned JS, 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 which has been something that's kind of blown up. You know, there's lots of rants on, I think, both sides of this idea. But I think the general premise is that JavaScript is eating the web and it's making it more and more difficult for folks that have traditionally had a different direction into web development through HTML and CSS or, you know, other kind of maybe even more accessible approaches. How do we reconcile that? And how do we, you know, like be more inclusive as people with experience that understand these things more completely? How do we make space for newcomers in our industry?
Well, I think it starts by recognizing that HTML and CSS are still here.
They are.
I have definitely seen hot takes on both sides, and one from Kevin Wheeler that's like, you could still save a HTML file, right? Yeah, you can. Yeah. I think the challenge is in jobs where people are having, it's impacting their career. And I think it's totally understandable that there would be a lot of fear and uncertainty from folks who feel like, well, crap, how am I going to make a living? And the decisions being made on tech teams don't consider that necessarily. And where this is really challenging is sometimes that might be the right technology for building a web application. And what I'm wondering is, you know, maybe there's other supplementary work that would make it possible for folks to contribute, like UI prototyping before you write your application in React or whatever technology you've chosen, building out your UI with static files first to just prototype things, making sure they work. So I think there's definitely room for that role. It just, where it's tricky is like, if you're building an application, I don't know, it's these choices in tech stacks. Like there isn't a good choice sometimes.
Yeah.
You're picking the thing that'll make a high-quality, well-performing web application. Where does HTML and CSS fit into that? It comes down to the individual tech stack decisions. And I think there's maybe some smaller decisions we could make, like maybe don't use CSS and JS. I don't know. That's a really controversial one. I personally like a static HTML a static CSS file. That's what I did for my site. I think maybe you could use CSS includes instead of. So what I'm talking about is, style components or something where you have like inline CSS in your templates. And some people really like it.
I'm raising my hand, actually.
I'm
on the other side. Like my relationship with CSS has improved so much over the last, year and a half or so since we started. We use Emotion, which is styled components, the same kind of principle. But like this idea that my styles are really close to the elements and I'm not having to give them like conjure up names for things and everything's just kind of right there for me has been like a huge, I've traditionally said I hate CSS and that's a mindset, right? But like I actually really enjoy what it does for the internet and I think it's a great tool, but like moving it closer to the elements has been great for me. And but there's two sides to the argument, just like you said, it's hard to pick a winner and it's really kind of almost team and project and organization based at that point.
Yeah, I mean there's so many ways to build things, and I think a good intermediate step would be let people write static CSS and then import it. That would be a good compromise. I personally started with a static CSS file because I share styles like across components. And at least for my initial build, the refactoring required, like if I change something in one place, I just didn't have a good system for that. And I'm a team of one on this project. Yep. So I think that works. It doesn't exactly scale though. Like if you're working on a big team, you can't all be working in the same giant CSS file, nor do you want to load a giant CSS file.
I think we literally use like every way that you can possibly use CSS on our primary, like AKED.io. Like literally every single approach to CSS is in use, from tachyons to static files to SAS to like importing to CSS modules to Emotion. Like over, it's just because it's a 5-year project, right? So as it's evolved over those 5 years, we end up with just this stack of it's a mess.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you need a good inline style. And if you are writing a React component, doing it inline makes sense. Like I do some of that, but if I want things to be reusable, I usually will put them in CSS and then I just use the CSS class. So I'm kind of like a bridge between like the static CSS side and the JavaScript side. But I recognize I wrote a thing on Twitter that got a lot of commentary, and I was just like, can we focus on making stuff that works for people regardless of what the tech is? Because I see so many inaccessible projects and we only have so much energy. Can we focus our energy on just making stuff that works for people instead of so much on our own fear? And I felt like I was coming from kind of a wholesome place, but getting all those responses of people of like how worried they are, and there is a genuine concern. And I ended up writing about leadership in that I think it's a failure to not listen to people around you and not give them some empathy. So it's a really challenging situation to find solutions for quickly. But I think the first start is just listening to people and hearing like their genuine concerns about things and not just shrugging it off like, whatever. Because for sure. A lot of us, you know, as we get more senior in our careers are making decisions about products and about teams that can impact the people around us. And it would be a real shame to not pay attention to those around you in your industry and just kind of like, I don't know, look out for number one.
Yeah, it's kind of like the got mine attitude, right? Like we need to not have that, in my opinion, right? Like we've made it, we broke through, we understand how to code and can write, you know, JavaScript and software and do all this fun stuff, but not everybody can. And just because we have reached that point doesn't mean we have to stop thinking about those folks that are still trying to get to where maybe we're at.
Totally. Yeah, because I think you might really miss out on some innovative front-end engineering by going straight to JSX and stuff. Whereas maybe in your organization, there is room to hire someone who really kicks ass at CSS, and they could create something so innovative in, you know, the way of working that they can really be successful. And then maybe you convert that into the UI for your application. Like, you make sure it works, you validate it in CSS and HTML, and then you like, you know, divide it up into components later. So I think the UI prototyping role is super important, especially for products that live on. So I think just recognizing that that's a skill set that can be super valuable to your organization is a really good start. Whereas I think some of the fear is around like, we don't need that. We're just going to like have a full stack grad do this. But they didn't learn that part of the job. So yeah, I think there's room for lots of different ways of working. And I think our goal should be to make the most successful products we can. And sometimes, you know, having people whose expertise is making a really solid UI, they might be better in HTML and CSS. We should embrace that.
For Egghead, we've done that actually, and it's been really great for us. The way we approach things is different. Like we're not a high stress organization in general, just because I can't handle that. I don't want that. We have two folks that started with us, one as a pure designer, just doing, you know, comps and layouts in that respect, who has learned CSS and JavaScript and development over the last several years. And then somebody that just did CSS and HTML and would just do static comps. It was just me and him for a long time. He would do static comps. I would implement them in, you know, Rails at the time or React going forward. But over the years of working with these folks, they have those fundamental skills and are really good at that. But then can also implement these things as React components now at this point, because we've, you know, done code reviews and talked about it and learned over time. And it's really been actually pretty great. And now, you know, we have a working relationship and this like really truly full stack of skills, which to me, if you're really talking full stack, it goes, you know, like design and comps is part of that to me, you know, through all the way back to the database or wherever you draw the line at a full stack.
Yeah, man, that's a lot of skills to have to be a master at.
Isn't it? It's a lifetime.
Yeah, it is a lifetime. Well, and not everyone's going to be passionate about all of that stuff.
No. And you can stop at any point in that line. And like, you know, I don't know SQL at all, really. I'm, you know, like a two-finger lookup Stack Overflow SQL person. Like I can do it, like if I have to, but it's going to take all day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's worth reminding everyone that, like, we've kind of always had this problem, like, with databases and server-side languages that you didn't want to write in. So it's like, this isn't exactly a new problem. It's just that now CSS, you can write it in JavaScript. But, like, if you were writing stuff for CMS or, I mean, I remember doing stuff for Target where the, like, stuff was written in Java. And you kind of had this front-end stuff sprinkled in there. And like, yeah, getting me to write Java in that circumstance was like, no way. So I would definitely prototype outside of the real environment. And I don't think that's really changed necessarily. It's just that now JavaScript, like a lot more of us can write in the front end. So it feels like it's swallowing the world because now we can do more. But I kind of think that this problem has existed in some ways the whole time.
There's a lot of interesting solutions being done too, because they're like Webflow and Figma and these other tools that are like, feel like bridge tools to me, to like bridge those worlds and you know, help ease the pain and do integrations and exports and different things to, you know, take like the design side and move that forward. So I think, you know, I think there's hope. And I actually personally believe that we're like in the best place that the web has ever been, but it's still not great. And we have to work to improve it over time.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, that's the thing, is we have to keep working at it to improve. And the web is more complex than it used to be. It's also like kind of bad for humanity at the same time.
It's so weird. It's like the phones, like it's like the worst, best thing. I don't know. Like it's the whole thing. It's just weird to me. Like at the end of the day,
you think shaming?
Oh, man, is shaming and scolding the way forward?
No.
Like, should we be calling people out more and doing that sort of thing? What's another approach? We won't even talk about shaming and scolding, but if we want to choose something different, like how can we be more inclusive in our encouragement to folks that we think are doing the wrong thing?
Well, I think it starts with listening, and I definitely try to do my share of that. Yeah, someone called me aggressive recently, or they're like, I think you're being too aggressive. And I'm like, me? Really? But even then, I'm like, still really taking that to heart. And so I think it starts by, listening to people around you and trying to be someone that people want to work with. Like, I saw this a lot with accessibility, with the kind of carrot and stick conversation. And yeah, it really doesn't work too well most of the time to jab people with a stick and shame them into doing something. I found that, you know, if you're excited and forgiving and encouraging, then they're like, oh, cool, yeah, I can do this. And they feel like, oh, you know, they're not mad at me. So yeah, I think the encouragement is definitely the way forward. But it can be hard because we're humans and we get frustrated and, you know, we have valid points sometimes. And I bend over backwards trying to be as nice as I can sometimes. And I know for a lot of women, that's true, especially for a lot of women of color as well, where like you have to be endlessly nice or people will call you aggressive. And yeah, so women, I think, innately know this very well. But in general, I mean, I think we do the best we can. I would like to see the thought leaders with their hot takes maybe cool it sometimes.
So I always like people just demanding that people do what they want them to do is hey, you need to do this right now. Like instead of like starting a conversation and or listening, like you personally giving us feedback, like Egghead, because I'm the first to admit we're not the most accessible site in the world. We're, you know, for one, we're delivering video, but you know, like we weren't, you know, our transcripts weren't great. We didn't have closed captions, and you gave me feedback, and it really made me think. And the way you delivered it, actually, like, I didn't feel defensive. I just wanted to like participate and be better, and it was much appreciated. So all of that feedback you've given us over the years has been much appreciated. Just to let you know that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I see or hear from colleagues with disabilities, like the trouble they have, and I can hear the frustration in their voice. The situation for people with disabilities on the web is pretty horrible sometimes. And so if I can hear them and try to take their concern and the barriers that they're hitting and then try to, like, I don't know, use my power and influence to make it better for them somehow, I think I've done a good job. So and it's always a work in progress too. Like, nobody expects you to fix it in the next release. You chip away at it, do what you can, get more feedback, and it's always a process. So I think, you know, knowing that as long as people are, you know, starting to do the work and then keeping on it over time, like we'll gradually make things better. And in educating people of it is the most important thing. And, you know, we kind of rag on full stack boot camps and stuff just because there's so many that don't even really touch on accessibility or front end fundamentals. Like, if you go through one of those and you don't learn about HTML semantics and CSS, like, they should beef up their curriculum for sure. Because this stuff impacts real people. It's like your choice in tech stack to the end user, like, as long as it renders and they can use it, like, they don't really care that you used Redux or whatever thing it is that you picked. They care whether they can use it. So that's what I was trying to convey with this conversation of like trying to corral our energy back to making stuff work for users. But what I ended up learning was like, I should listen more to the people around me and really try to, I don't know, just because I'm comfortable with it doesn't mean that I should just brush off everybody's concerns. So I don't really have good answers other than listening more, trying to use our power for good. And yeah,
listen more, you know, try to improve things one step at a time, build community versus, you know, building silos and being aggressive to one another. I think that's super great advice in general. Like, it's a good lifestyle choice, in my opinion.
My stress level is way lower. Like, anytime I get in any kind of a conversation that's a little heated, I'm just like so distracted for the rest of the day. Cause I'm just like, did I say something wrong? Like, could I be better? And it eats me up until I feel like I've grown and listened enough to, I don't know, not make the same mistakes and to do better next time.
Something that you've done recently that I thought was really interesting. You started your own local group, Northwest Tech Women. And I was wondering if you could tell me about that organization that you started in Bellingham and what it's all about.
Yeah, so it's a super small group because Bellingham is a small city. It grew out of the closure of Girl Develop at Bellingham, which was a one-off group. I intended to make it a full Girl Develop It chapter, but 2-3 years ago, that organization, it's a national nonprofit encouraging women and non-binary adults in software. Unfortunately, I think they scaled too big, didn't have good processes, and they do have the wrong leaders in charge. And I think it's really been disappointing, but like in the end, if we make better opportunities and we've learned, then, you know, it's not all bad. So with Northwest Tech Women, I started a new group kind of with no constraints of a nonprofit that GDI had, and we can have social events. Once I kind of recover from the new job fire hose, I want to have more of a focus on volunteering. So you could come meet with the group and say, hey, I've got a little extra time and I want to donate my time to a good cause. So we're going to pair with some nonprofits and just have some little side projects that we can say we've done things in our community and tried to make an impact there. Whereas like that never fit into the Girl Develop It model, really. Yeah. We were always trying to fit into their model, but we were not a full chapter at the same time. So between that, like format mismatch and what I've learned about that organization, there's some really hard-learned life lessons there about leadership. And I think we're all, you know, we make mistakes. I think, you know, that's not unusual. It's what you do after you've learned you've made a mistake. Like, what do you do then? And I think that it's that pushed me to get away from Girl Develop It and create something new, just knowing that like we can do better in our community. And I've been really grateful to be a part of a Girl Develop It alumni network. Lots of conversations about how much more we can do for women of color in our communities. Bellingham is super white, but I think I can still do more. And so that's kind of how this new group was born, was having those tough conversations and making a commitment to do more for a community.
So if folks wanted to start, you know, a group like this in their own city, maybe they don't have one, or maybe they're not happy with what's available. What do you have any advice for, you know, how to get that started?
Yeah, well, I think it really helps to partner with an organization that exists, as long as you know, their values align with you. And there is another effort spinning up. It's called We Pivot. And that, for women in tech, really like a values aligned thing. Because the problem with Girl Develop It is like they said it in their mission. Like they literally said all of these values in their mission, but they didn't live up to it. And so all of us we're just tired of waiting. And so doing something where, you know, you really put your values first and act on those, a group like We Pivot, that'll be a new nonprofit that you could partner with. If there's other groups in your organization, maybe go to an event and see if you want to be a part of it. And I'm knowing from running a chapter of a group, it's always really helpful to get help. For Northwest Tech Women, we kept it pretty low pressure. So it's just social. And that alone is such a value add in our community, because we get women showing up who are, you know, new faces from neighboring communities. Maybe they work remotely and Cedra Woolley or Anacortes or wherever nearby, and they come to the group and they're like, yes, I found community. And we network. And so I think you could even just have Code and Coffees, maybe find a sponsor to cover your meetup fee. I just took that on because that's my give. I can give back to my community by paying for a meetup group. So yeah, I think there's lots you can do just by starting small. I think it's easier to do that in a small city. I think in, you know, somewhere like Seattle, there's just so many people that...
So much going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and that can grow pretty unwieldy. So having something established like this new We Pivot group could help. I mean, there's lots of other groups as well, like Black Girls Code and lots of different formats. So yeah, I think just finding one that aligns with your values and what you want to do and finding some time to contribute. I know it's given me a lot back in my life, so I highly recommend it.
I think it's interesting too, like the more casual approach where it's not, you know, not about tech presentations. It's really more about sitting down and having conversations and talking to one another and just, you know, kind of interacting. I really appreciate that because I don't necessarily, one, you don't have the pressure of always organizing and finding people to speak or whatever. But then you also just are there to hang out and kind of be a part of a community.
Yeah, I think it helps to see people, you know, for women, it helps to see other women that are doing it. And we're all in different like stages of our careers. So we can help each other network and talk about tech and just have our own environment where we feel comfortable. And we are a part of another group here in Bellingham called Bellingham Codes, and they have monthly meetups. So like we have a joint Slack. So there's definitely some crossover. But, you know, when I closed GDI Bellingham, I thought like, should we just roll into Bellingham Codes? And ultimately I thought, no, I think this women's group, we're gender inclusive, but like that, just having a dedicated group for this, these type of conversations and for people to come in and, you know, women and non-binary people, gender fluid people to come in. It's like, it's just a different environment and there's something really special and magical about it. So yeah, it's super fulfilling.
I love that it's explicit too. It's not like, maybe I'm going to be welcome here. You know, it's like your values and your message is telling people that yes, regardless of whom you are, you're welcome here. And this is a space for you. And we need more of that. You know, it's like, there's lots of spaces for, you know, my dudes to go hang out and feel like they belong, but, you know, not as many that are explicitly expressing that in terms of core values. And I think that's important work and appreciate that you're participating.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's just lots of groups in general, and for white guys and even white women, it just like, we're just the default, like you're welcome everywhere. Yeah. I think it's for people of color and for, women, like maybe you don't always feel comfortable. And so that's where these spaces are born. It's not that white guys aren't allowed in this group. It's just that, like, I don't know, you want to have a different vibe at the place. And so I think there's lots of room for different kinds of things. And we explicitly say all are welcome, you know, including your partner or your friend that's a guy. Like it's not that you're excluded. And I've made that really explicit just because I get that question a lot. And I think a lot of women's groups get that a lot. Like, am I welcome here? It's like, heck yeah, you're welcome. You know, as long as you know that you're signing up for and like a space where all questions are valued and we just want to, you know, be together and network, like, yeah, it's totally fine.
It's a filter and the good kind, in my opinion, right? Like you're welcome here as long as you can accept this is our core values and, you know, you don't have a problem with that, then this is a space for you too. But if you do, then, you know, maybe don't show up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then the people who do show up because they're like, yeah, that sounds cool. They add to the conversation and it ends up being great. So yeah. But I do think it takes good leadership and moderation to kind of walk that balance and know like, maybe they shouldn't come back.
Yeah.
So having leaders that kind of recognize like the vibe of the thing and the balance is important, but yeah, making it inclusive is also very important.
Well, Marcy, I really appreciate you coming and talking to me today.
We'll have to come buzz by you in the van sometime.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Thank you so much. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers to you.